The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of Kevin Jordan or his guests. These gardening tips and suggestions may work for you, as well as those from alternative sources. When using any garden products or tools, read and follow all label directions.
The Green Acres Garden Podcast is the podcast dedicated to helping gardeners hone their growing skills while we celebrate our love of plants. So whether you're new to growing or a seasoned gardener, you're sure to learn something new. Join the fun as we have conversations with world-class growers, passionate green thumbs, and professional garden experts from Green Acres Nursery and Supply. Listen every week. We'll answer questions you didn't know you had. And away we go. Welcome, everybody. Gardeners, Green Thumbs, thanks for tuning in. Glad you could be here. We're all are welcome at the Green Acres Garden Podcast. Well, the birds are chirping, the bees are buzzing, and gardeners are growing, my friends. Spring is here, and we are getting after it. We have a great episode for you this week. And like a trichogramma in a sea of caterpillar eggs, I'm pretty darn happy to be here. I'm your host, Kevin Jordan, back in studio. Let's say hello to the international man of mystery himself, Austin Blank, on audio. How's it going there, Austin?
Hello, Kevin, and hello, and welcome back to all of our listeners. Let's get into a fun and exciting topic this week. Kevin, what are we talking about this week?
We're coming to us from Southern California. We had a delightful conversation with Steve Hazard of Organic Control, where we talked all about gardening with organisms, utilizing nature to balance out the nature in our own gardens. So whether you have aphids, grubs, and beyond, all those little pest insects can actually be balanced out with all the beneficial organisms. And so Steve gave us an incredible interview. But before we get into that, Austin, I actually brought a little show and tell.
Oh, what you got?
I've been talking about my rose little patch I planted. Things are blooming. They're popping up one by one.
That's one of your roses?
Dude, take a look at that. Describe that for the listeners. And like a hummingbird on some sage, dip your beak in that and get a little bit.
Before I put my beak in it, I just want to appreciate the flower here. This is a beautiful, gorgeous, like crimson red rose.
Beauty and Beast rose.
Just like the Beauty and the Beast rose because it's just perfectly opened and like, wow, I'm going to smell it. Oh, God, it's so fragrant. Smells amazing.
Isn't that nuts?
I can't believe it's already produced flowers
and
like this.
Yeah, and there are more on the way. That's just one of the few.
Wow, that's like the perfect 10 out of 10 rose.
Isn't that
right
nice?
There.
Yeah, and so I've just noticed they're popping off with the weather we've been having, with the warmth, a little bit of moisture, some more warmth.
Yeah.
They're just cranking off, and I actually stopped to smell the roses the other day, and I had to clip this one off and bring it in.
Well, thanks for bringing it in. That's
so good.
Really, really cool.
Hey, don't you go falling in love with me, buddy.
Okay.
All right? That's the power of roses. Okay, promise you won't. But let's get to it. Like I said, a great interview.
Right.
My roses had some bugs.
What'd you have on them?
A little bit of aphid. Sprayed them off the hose. Came back the next day. Most of them were gone, and then I noticed the ladybugs had already moved in.
Okay, good.
So things are balancing out, and I think maybe we'll gain a little more insight.
Sure.
With Steve, and like I said, with that trichogramma joke, if you didn't get that trichogramma reference, hopefully by the end of today's episode, you will, and then you'll laugh. And go,
okay, so we
good.
Won't tell anybody yet just what that is.
Yeah.
I actually personally learned a lot of cool stuff about bugs that I didn't really even know before. We've talked about them before, but it's really cool to talk to another professional, get another perspective, and we learn a lot about the insects and live animals that you can actually buy in the store and then take and utilize in your home garden. So it's really cool to learn from the pros about this stuff.
Fascinating.
And Steve was just an amazing guy to talk to about this. So let's go ahead and jump into that interview. We met up with Steve Hazard via Zoom. He came in from SoCal, like you mentioned.
The beast master himself.
We had a great talk with him. Let's go ahead and dive into that now. Here we go.
Steve Hazard, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm really excited to have you on today. You've come to us. Your reputation has preceded you, but maybe our listeners might not know who you are and what your role is or the company that you work for. Can you give us a little bit of a background on yourself and your role there at Orcon?
A long time ago, long, long time ago, over 40 years ago, I started the company after talking to a guy who was growing beneficial insects on government grants. He was an entomologist at UC Riverside, and he was growing beneficial insects for the agricultural industry. And I thought, wow, that really sounds cool. I bet I could sell those beneficial insects to the home and garden market. And so the insects we started with were Trichogramma and green lacewing. And unfortunately, nobody had ever heard of those insects. So it was kind of tough going at first. But then we introduced ladybugs and praying mantids, and everybody's heard of those.
Oh, yeah.
And so then we started to grow. And, you know, little by little over the years, we've added more products and things.
Well, maybe for some of us who aren't as acquainted with beneficial insects and organisms, can you tell us kind of what they are?
Well, basically, a good bug is anything that eats a bad bug.
There we go.
And basically, a bad bug is what eats your plants. Our whole philosophy is to try to give people a choice when they're trying to fight those bad bugs of not having to use a strong chemical that they would rather not use, might be harmful to their kids or their pets. And so we provide alternatives to control pests by using good bugs, by introducing good bugs into the garden.
So I know you kind of break them into two groups, the predators and the parasites. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Basically, beneficial insects come in sort of two classes, predators and parasites. Predators are what we're most common with, like ladybugs, where they actually eat their prey. And most of them do that by having mandibles on the front of their body, which are like big pinchers. And they come up and they pierce the body of their prey, let's say an aphid, and just suck all the fluid out without actually consuming the insect. And that's why they can eat so many. Typically, and a ladybug can eat 50 aphids per day because it just goes up, pierces the body of the aphid, sucks the fluid out, and then moves on to the next one.
God, that reminds me of the movie Alien.
Yeah. And if you go way back in time, there was a movie called Them, which was about the desert, California desert, when they were testing atomic weapons, and that caused the ants to grow to be the size of cars. And they had these big mandibles, and they'd come up and they'd, you know, grab people. And so anyway,
that would be frightening. I guess if you're an aphid and a ladybug is coming at you, it might as well be the size of a car.
Yeah, that's right. It's exactly right. But anyway, so that's the way most predators work. And then parasites generally work by laying their eggs inside of a host egg. So let's say tomato hornworms is a good example. That's a pretty common pest that a lot of us have. And so if you get Trichogramma wasp, and, you know, people always recoil a little bit when they hear the word wasp, but these wasps are really tiny, about the size of a period at the end of a sentence. And what they do is they go and seek out their favorite host eggs. And one of their favorites is tomato hornworm eggs. So they lay their eggs inside those tomato hornworm eggs. They hatch first and feed on the tomato hornworm eggs and then go on and do it again. And so that way the tomato hornworm eggs never get to hatch. And so there's several different insects that come in that category.
What a clever adaptation. And so the maybe I'm saying this wrong, Trichogramma?
You got it, Trichogramma, yep.
Is that when people always kind of refer to it as the parasitic wasp? Is that what they're talking about?
There are actually many parasitic wasps, but Trichogramma is probably the most common one.
Oh, wonderful. You know, you're starting to notice, I've seen some videos and things of people discussing utilizing beneficial insects like inside controlled growing environments, like a greenhouse. Have you seen any uses in that?
Oh, yeah. Green lacewings are a very common insect to use in greenhouses because they're usually applied as eggs. And then they hatch into lacewing larvae. And so the larvae exist for about 2 weeks. And the nice thing about larvae is they don't have wings, and so they can't fly. So you know for sure they're going to stay right where you put them. And while a ladybug can eat about 50 aphids a day, a green lacewing larvae can eat about 1,000 aphids a day, plus other soft-bodied insects. But again, aphids is their favorite. But so they are very commonly used in greenhouses because they can eat so much. And you can just sprinkle them out kind of on a proactive basis so that they'll be hatching and crawling around all the time. So they're very commonly used in greenhouses. And interestingly enough, while ladybugs, both the larval stage and the adult stage, eat aphids with green lacewings, while they're extremely hungry as larvae, when they become adults, they hardly eat anything. They eat a little bit of pollen or nectar, but the adults are like egg-laying machines, and so they just start laying eggs like crazy, and the eggs hatch into larvae, and the process goes on. So very effective.
If I'm a gardener and I'm out, you know, walking this, putting some steps out in the soil there, how will I know, like, can I identify green lacewing eggs? Are they pretty easy? I know I've seen the ladybugs before. They're those nice bright clusters of the yellow all kind of packed tightly together. They stand out pretty good for me. But what about those lacewings?
Lacewing eggs are a little harder to see. They're smaller than the ladybug eggs, and they're kind of brown in color. So they blend in real easily. However, what's really nice about green lacewing eggs is this is just one of the most amazing things. We have a video of it on our website if somebody wants to take a look. They actually lay their eggs on the end of a stalk, the end of a hair. And what that does is it protects them from predators. And then when they hatch out, they hatch out by cutting that's when they hatch out of their cocoon. But they hatch out of that egg, which is on a stalk, and then as larvae begin patrolling the area. And then they exist for about 2 weeks, and then they form a little cocoon, and that's much more easy to see. That's about the size of a small pea. And then after being in there for a few days, they cut a perfectly circular hole in it and come out as an adult. So they're another one of nature's amazing creatures.
Yeah, it's wild the different methods and the steps that insects go through in their lives. You mentioned the larva of a ladybug, and this is one of my favorite things to point out to people because oftentimes, and you maybe can talk on this as well, I think bugs get a bad rap in the garden. When we talk about plants and growing, one of the things you're like, oh, bugs, I hate, you know, people have, you know, I want to spray this, spray that, and squish them, squash them. But it sounds like there's like you said, there's a balance between the good bugs and the bad bugs. And with the ladybugs, I noticed that their larvae oftentimes get misidentified as something that's bad or something that's a negative influence on the garden. Can you tell us a little bit about them and how to identify them? Because they're really cool to me.
They are really cool, and they don't look anything like the adult. You know, they look, I don't know, I usually describe them as they look like little alligators with red spots.
Yep.
So I can't tell you how many times I've been in the nursery and somebody comes up to me and says, how do I get rid of these things? I've got them all over my yard. And, you know, I have to tell them, well, boy, you're in luck. These are ladybug larvae, you know, and they'll go to work for you. It's a lot of times the larva stage doesn't look anything like the adults.
Yeah. It's pretty wild. Insects are so interesting, which kind of brings me to my next question. So your company, Orcon, you guys, you know, develop and produce and sell, I think, what is it? You said ladybugs, green lacewings. You brought up praying mantids. Is it mantids, mantid, or mantis?
it's mantis is sort of the general term, and mantids is the specific insect.
And so when you purchase those, you don't get them live, but you can get an egg case, correct?
Right. And I think we sell more of those for pets than we actually do for pest control, because they're just so much fun. They're just great for kids to watch the whole process. You know, you put them in a terrarium or something like that and watch them hatch out, and then you can actually feed them insects and watch them grow, and they'll shed their skin probably four or five times. And you can take like a sow bug or a cricket or something like that and hold in front of them, and they'll grab it out of your hand and eat it. When I go to trade shows, I often put one up on my shoulder and it just rides around there on my shoulder. they're a lot of fun.
What are the pests that they're targeting most? Because we've heard kind of mixed things on them. We've had some gardeners go, I love them, they're a great sign of a healthy garden. Other people are like, oh, I don't want them because they might harm my hummingbirds or whatever. Where do you fall on that? Are they a neutral? Are they beneficial? And what pests are they really taking care of the best?
They are by very much a beneficial insect. The nice thing about them is that they'll just grab almost anything, you know, spiders and crickets and almost anything. Now, when they get to be full size, there are some famous videos of them grabbing hummingbirds, And, you know, that's something we would just assume they don't do, but that is so rare and really just part of the balance of nature. You know, insects don't always do everything we want them to do. And so once in a while, they eat something we don't want them to, but 99% of the time they eat pests that we would like to have eaten. So they're just a great, we often refer to them as guardians of the garden, because one of their unusual traits is that rather than go out and looking for food like you and I do and most other insects do, they would prefer to just stay perfectly still and wait for something to crawl by. And they're just very good at camouflage. They actually will change color to blend in with their environment. So if they're on a brown plant, they'll change color to be brown. If they're on a green plant, they'll change color to be green. And they just stay perfectly still until their prey walks by. And then their lightning fast arms grab their prey and eat it. I like to watch them eat a earwig, because they hold it like an ear of corn, and they just start with one end and eat it right from one end to the other.
I'm guilty, Steve, of enjoying them watching them eat as well. I used to work at nurseries way back when, and on those, you know, slow days in late summer, we'd see them, you know, in the nursery, like you said, kind of lying in wait on the tops of flower buds, just kind of sitting there. And we'd go catch little white butterflies and white, you know, little moths, and go over there and just feed them right to it. And they eat the body and they toss the wings. It's incredible.
Yeah, toss the wings and toss the feet. You usually get a little pile of legs and feet.
Well, I'm curious, when you do get an egg case, what is the best practice to actually get them to hatch and then introduce it into the landscape?
We always used to say, put one in the crotch of a branch, you know, just wedge it in a branch. But the problem with that is it's hard to tell if they've hatched or not. So now what we recommend is, because we sell them now in a clear plastic cup, we recommend that you just leave them in that clear plastic cup, like put them in a windowsill so the sun will shine on them and kind of warm them up a little, and then just watch them every day. And then as soon as they hatch, then you know for sure they hatched, because you can see them all in there. And then you can release them in different parts of your garden instead of just in one place. So that will make it possible for more of them to survive. So that's what we actually recommend now, is that you just leave them in the container that you bought them in, but watch them carefully, because once they start hatching, that little egg case typically has 200 eggs in it, and usually about half of those hatch. And usually their first meal is, you know, one of their brothers and sisters, so they will start eating each other. But so that's why you want to get them out in the yard as soon as you see them hatch.
Fantastic. I love a good Uwatheca. Now let's go even weirder. Now, praying mantis, they look almost prehistoric, but I want to go in an even weirder direction. What are your thoughts on nematodes?
Beneficial nematodes are probably the most effective creature that we sell. They're microscopic little worms. They come dried onto a material called vermiculite, kind of looks like granola or something like that. And you just soak it in water, and that activates these little worms. And you spray it into the soil, and they attack all kinds of pests that live under the soil. Probably the most common use is grubs.
Really?
The way they do it is they're small enough, they can actually crawl inside the body of the grub and infect the grub with a bacteria that they carry. That bacteria kills the grub, and then the nematode lays its eggs inside the dead grub. The eggs hatch and feed on the dead grub, and then explode out of the grub with 1,000 more nematodes. So they actually reproduce in your garden under the soil. And that's why typically introducing them just once during a season, they will remain there all season long, continuing to feed on pest insects. Fleas is probably one of the most common use for them. They kill flea larvae, which is, fleas typically breed in the soil, in like a lawn or something like that, and then the dog carries the fleas back inside. So if you can kill the fleas out in the yard before they come inside, then you'll be way ahead of the game.
Wow, I love that. That's incredible. And I think we're back to the sci-fi with your description of their life cycle. Well, I'm curious, we've talked about the predators, some parasites. Are there any beneficial insects that you know of, or that you carry or that you promote that are neither of those, that, that do other things that are beneficial for our garden. We talk about bees and things like that a lot. I'm a huge fan of worms and worm castings. What is your feelings?
Worms are one of the best things you can add to your yard because one of the things that's kind of unique about earthworms, they never sleep. They are burrowing 24 hours a day. So while you're, you know, drifting off to sleep at night, you can just think of all the worms out in your garden that are burrowing and making little tunnels in your yard, in your soil. And what that does is it, it helps oxygen get down to the roots of the plants. So that's the, one of their benefits. And then as they're burrowing, they're constantly eating, and they ingest long organic molecules and kind of break them down into shorter molecules that are more easily absorbed by plants, that makes the nutrients more available to the roots of plants so they can be more useful to the plants. So so worms just have all kinds of beneficial characteristics. And probably one of the most helpful is that one of the enzyme they use to break their food down comes out in their poop. And their poop is often referred to as castings, worm castings. And so if you add castings to your soil, the castings are great at retaining moisture. So you, if you put them in a potted plant, you don't have to water as much. But if you have sap-sucking pests like whitefly that are attacking your plants, and you put some worm castings in the soil, the there's an enzyme called chitinase that will get sucked up by the roots and into the sap of the plants. And as the sap suckers go to sap, my tongue gets tied up here, go to suck the sap that's in these plants, the chitinase will actually dissolve their insides and they'll die. So if you have a plant like a lot of different plants that are attacked by whitefly, putting a healthy dose of worm castings around the base of the plant and watering it in will take care of the problem. It doesn't happen overnight. It might take 2-3 weeks for that whole process to happen, but it works every time. It's really terrific.
Well, this is great news because I love earthworm castings. I've got some more. I've got worms, Steve. I've got worms, really bad. Do you garden at home at all, or are you too busy with running this business?
My wife is the gardener in our family, she does most of the gardening. But I like to try different things out. One of our newer products is mason bees, and so we try to keep a colony of mason bees going. Mason bees are was generally referred to as solitary bees, and that's opposed to honeybees, which are social bees. And social bees are the ones we're most familiar with because they have a hive and a queen, and all the different bees have jobs. You know, you got the worker bees and the bees that take care of the queen and all that. But mason bees are part of a group called solitary bees, which is by far the most common bees around the world, are solitary bees that don't have a queen, don't have a social structure. They operate individually. But many of them are just excellent pollinators. And the one that we handle is called a mason bee. And each one of them can do the pollinating work of 120 honeybees. They're just really excellent pollinators. And it's easy to put a little nest in your garden and attract these bees to your garden. And they tend not to sting. The females do have stingers, but they don't have the instinct that a honeybee does to protect the queen. Basically, a honeybee stings to protect the queen. And since mason bees don't have that instinct, it's very difficult to get one of them to sting, but they're just great pollinators. The reason that they're such good pollinators is because honeybees like to gather pollen and nectar and stuff it into sacs they have on their body and carry it back for the benefit of the hive. But mason bees don't have that. So they get, as they go from flower to flower, they just get covered with pollen and nectar. And then they take that back to their nest and they use that to make little cells for their eggs that they lay in their tubes and feed their feed their eggs that hatch into larvae. So they're a lot of fun to watch also.
Do they look unique, or in a way, how will I know if I see them in my garden?
Their technical name is blue orchard mason bee, because they have kind of a blue tinge, and they typically fly slower than your average honeybee. So if you've probably seen them thousands of times and you just thought it was a fly going by, but in reality it was a mason bee, and they're typically found, you know, all over the country. And because they don't have a hive, what they like to do is find a hole to lay their eggs into. And, you know, it's one of those things where I can kind of go on and on, but it's really amazing that they lay eggs that are female eggs first, and between each egg, they put in some food, and then they build a wall by taking dirt from the ground and mixing with their saliva and building a wall. And that's why they're called mason bees, because they build these walls. And so then they lay another egg and put in some food and build another wall, and they keep doing that. And the first three or four eggs that they lay are females, and then the next ones are males. And then after they've filled up a tube, then they kind of seal it off and make another one. And that's how they survive the fall and winter. And then in the spring, the males hatch out first, and they kind of jostle around the entrance to the tube to see who the number one male is, and they wait for the females to come out, and whoever the number one male is mates with that first female that comes out. Usually they mate in the air, and
impressive.
Female goes off and starts laying more eggs. So, and the males don't do much after that. They just hang around, drink beer, watch TV, and they're pretty much done.
Are we talking about bees still? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's really cool. Bees blow me away. Yeah, you brought up the honeybees and things like that, but it's a lot of folks maybe don't realize, I'm sure some do, that, and maybe you could correct me if I'm wrong, but the honeybees that we have here, they've all been brought in. They're not of this country naturally. Are the mason bees native to North America?
They are. The mason bees are native to North America, and like you say, the honeybees were brought in because they make honey, you know, and we like that. And also they can be transported easily, you know, so they're great for pollinating crops. There's a saying that every third bite of food we put in our mouth is a direct result of bee pollination. So bees are very, very important in growing food. But yeah, bees are just amazing creatures. Absolutely amazing.
So you've got me sold, Steve. What is the best way to get my hands on some of these beneficials? How can we find them? Let the good people know, please.
There's a lot of nurseries, like say Green Acres, for example, that carry these insects all the time. And so the best way is just to go into your local nursery and buy them. We recommend that. We do not sell online, so all of our products are sold through nurseries.
I noticed you don't sell online, but you do have a website with plenty of helpful information. Can you give us that website, please?
Yeah, it's organiccontrol.com. And we have a lot of videos in there that give a lot of great information about our different insects that we carry. There's a store locator. You can put in your zip code and you can find your nearest retail outlet. Our website is really nicely done. So I'd recommend somebody take a look at it, just because there's so much great information.
Well, Steve, I've had a blast learning from you today. I want to thank you for making time for us. I love beneficials and I really appreciate the work that you've been doing with them. It's really incredible that you've been able to take this and create an amazing career out of it. So I tip my straw hat to you, Steve, and thank you so much for making time for us today. We truly appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure. I really enjoyed it. Anytime seems like it'd be good to do it again, I'll be ready.
There we go. We'll have you back on as soon as we can.
All right, we are back. Big, big thank you to Steve Hazard from ORCON. Thank you for joining us. It was a treat to talk with you, and I so appreciated hearing all of the cool stuff you were talking about. I was learning, Kevin. I was learning about these wasps and these those mason bees. I never heard of that before. A lot of cool bugs, but that's just like the tip of the iceberg, right?
I love it. Yeah, absolutely. And so it's whether you're bringing these bugs in by luring them in with your plant choices or actually getting your hands on some physically at a store. It's pretty rad to be able to utilize nature in such a way to balance out, you know, the health of your garden, bring more insects, more life into that landscape, and hopefully have a positive result of it. So thank you, Steve. I was just like you, Austin. I learned a ton. If people want to get their hands on some of these things, now, of course, the mason bees are kind of hard to get your hands on, okay. And those wasps right. are difficult. But in the stores, like Green Acres Nursery and Supply, for instance, you'll probably always have a good selection and an opportunity to get your hands on the ladybugs, the praying mantis, the uathecas, their egg cases, the green lace wings, the nematodes, maybe some earthworms. Mm-hmm. So it's I think right there is you're probably going to have a good opportunity to kind right. of start your little adventure into utilizing those beneficial organisms in your own landscape.
Yeah, Steve was saying the nematodes are like the biggest, one.
Yeah, he said that's the one that people don't realize is so uniquely beneficial, whether it's the fleas or the grubs. I've seen some lawns specifically just decimated by grubs in the soil where you just see huge patches of dead areas around your plants, and then you just pulls up like a dead rug or whatever, and it's just grubs underneath there. Wow. So it's kind of cool that these microscopic worms that you can mix into water and literally irrigate into your soil,
so cool.
They go in there and disrupt the life cycle of those grubs and kind of mess it all up for them and make great things for you, which
and
is
you can't
pretty
even
cool.
see it, but you have to trust that it's
just
happening.
Just believe it, yeah.
That's so cool. Like, oh, man, little bugs doing their thing.
And it's fun to learn about these insects because then you start noticing them out in the garden. And so I feel like the more insects you can identify, the more often you go, okay, you can be more accurate and go, that's a leaf-footed bug. Okay, get that out of here. Mm-hmm. This is a green lacewing, which the look maybe looks a little scary, but only if you're an aphid because they are just awesome if you're the gardener. So pretty cool. I love learning about it. It's very sci-fi. It's fun to hear from somebody who's been doing it for so long and has such a, a storied past in it. You know, they've kind of built it from the ground up and truly believes in what they're talking about. So thank you so much, Steve. And thank you to our listeners for being here. We're probably about out of time, Austin.
Yeah,
what do you think?
Yeah, that's all. I hope, listeners can utilize bugs in their garden this season and it'll help them have great success. So with that, let's go ahead and get out of here.
Yeah, with that, not every bug is a bad bug, friends.
There we go.
Yes, let's help nature and utilize it as well. Until next week, garden friends, thank you all so much for being here. It's a pleasure each and every week to be here. My name's Kevin Jordan. Thanking you all for being here. Until next time, garden friends, happy gardening to you all. And please never stop growing. Let's bug out, Austin.
Let's bug out.